Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together. Whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Record. Hello, and welcome to another edition of My Property World. I'm Will Mellard, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Tinker. Paul is a construction management trainer, and he's on the show today to talk about communication within refurb projects, and in particular, in the context of planning your refurbishment. Now, I'm a property investor who there's always refurbs going on, and I find it fascinating. But firstly, Paul, you're very welcome. Maybe just as you're coming on, just the 1 minute version, who Paul Tinker is for the people who haven't come across your material previously.
Thanks for having me, Will. Thank you, mate. So I'm Paul Tinker, construction professional. I train property investors to make more profit from their refurbishment projects. And we do that through a number of different training courses, both online and in person.
Okay, that's fantastic. And where can someone find out a bit more about how to get involved? Because we've had you on previously, Paul, and you've got four training levels, basically, where there's a book, there's a free online training. I think the books are Fiverr, and you know, if you like that, there's options of coming to an in-person course, and that involves some on-site stuff as well as in the classroom. And I think you've got some ongoing mentoring or support available as well. But where does someone find out about this?
So someone can go over onto our website at www.constructiontrainingacademy.com, and on there you'll be able to find how to get in touch with us, how to work with us, and what levels of service that we can offer to help you start making more profit from your refurbishment projects.
Okay, so communication in the context of planning a refurbishment project, what's important, and what does communication actually mean to you?
Communication is the hugest piece for me on a refurb project. So many times do I hear things that have gone wrong. It's so easy when something goes wrong for one party to blame another. And very often we don't look at ourselves hard enough when this happens. Now, more than that, 99 times out of 100, the failing is down to a breakdown in communication. And I can apply this almost to anything, to any sort of failing on a project. I can probably gear it and point the finger at a communication piece if that thing has gone wrong. I can give you hundreds of examples. I'll just poke at one when it comes to we'll say budget. That's another classic. It's a classic complaint that I hear. My builder went over budget. My builder went over budget, and therefore he cost me money on my project. I didn't make enough profit. I didn't make the numbers that I anticipated. So there's so many things that have actually gone wrong here. And we can say my builder went over budget till we're blue in the face. It's not true. And it's not true because it is a little bit like going to Tesco and filling up your trolley, getting to the checkout and blaming the cashier for you spending too much money. That's the same thing, exactly the same thing. Your builder cannot go over your budget. It's impossible. That's the first piece. You are in control. You, the client, are in control of what is spent on that project, and that is done through communication. If you have signed up to a quotation in the first place, that's one communication. It's written. If you've managed the specification throughout, you've managed a quality assurance process, which again is a written process that you would do. If you've not done that, you failed a piece of communication. But what's most important before all of that, before I go into all of that and more, all of those levels of communication, all those breakdowns in communication, all come back to one thing. When we say the builder went over budget, I'll often ask the question, did the builder know what the budget was? Well, no, I'm not going to tell him that. So how can he go over budget? How can he go over a budget that he doesn't know exists? You have a budget and didn't communicate it. Who is that on? That is on you as the client. You as a client have to communicate your budget if you want your builder to stick to it. How can he do it any other way? He can't stick to a budget that he doesn't know exists. He can't stick to a budget that's not being communicated to him. He can't stick to a budget if there's no process in how to manage variations, extras, defects, late payments, all of that. If none of that's communicated, it cannot be managed. I think that's the key thing, Will.
And how important is listening within communication for an investor?
Oh, listening. Oh, I could talk about that for hours as well.
I'll listen to you talk about listening then.
there are many different forms of listening, aren't there? We know this. We've got the head nod. I appreciate we're just on audio here and you can't see me. But there's the old head nod. But yeah. Because, and people do this like almost as a reflex. Be getting some advice from a builder maybe. And you can see the client's empty eyes nodding away like they know what you're saying. And truly, they don't really know what you're saying. And you're trying to explain something, trying to explain maybe a position, trying to explain maybe why something has come up, what an extra is, maybe a process, could be anything. No matter what that thing is that the professional is trying to communicate to you. A good part of listening is actually questioning, which is a lot of people don't want to do this. And I'll try and explain why as best as what I can. What I mean by that is I might say to a client, Mr. Client, we need to expose the drains because we think there's been a little bit of subsidence on the corner of property and maybe a collapsed drain that's caused this. And I'll just get the head nod. Okay. Now, a part of that listening is going to be wanting to understand what that means. But men in particular, women, without trying to sound sexist and put people in boxes, women don't generally have a problem with this. What does subsidence mean? What do you mean the drain's collapsed? I will get that from a female client, but men don't do that.
No dumb questions.
No, men don't do that. Men don't, and I'm speaking generally now, men don't want to ask for help. What's the first thing that a man does when he opens some flat pack furniture? Throws the instructions away. And then they try and struggle through putting it together. And this is what happens in that particular example and lots of other examples like that. So rather than just nodding away, ask the question. Well, can you explain what subsidence means, mate? Yeah, no problem at all. And I'll run through it. I don't think you're an idiot. I don't think you're stupid for not knowing. I want to explain it to you because I want you to understand. I want you to understand what's involved. I want you to understand what the process is. I want to be able to justify what that extra may well cost you. And I can only do that by explaining what it is. If I just said to someone, oh, it's going to be an extra year of subsidence that's 10 grand. And the client goes, what? 10 grand for subsidence, but they don't know what subsidence is. I'm not paying that. That's what you're going to get. But ask the question, well, what does subsidence mean? Well, it means that maybe the ground's given way or heaved underneath and the building has dropped beyond where it should be. So what we need to do is jack up the building, insert some sort of foundations, some sort of underpinning structure underneath that, and then make it all good. And I can really explain that through use of drawings, through use of technology, through use of books, point of reference, YouTube video, whatever that is, whatever I can use to explain the understanding that's not there. I want to give that. I don't think you're stupid for asking. So sometimes listening is asking. Has that helped?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a friend who explained this probably a bit better than I'm about to, but he describes what happens is when you've got a thought in your head, you formulate an understanding. And when you open your mouth, what comes out is usually something that's slightly modified at best. And then that goes in someone's ear and into their head, and they may be half listening to it, so half of it goes in. Yeah. They then put their own slant on it, and yeah, it gets modified, and you might be down to 5% of what the original thought was.
Yeah.
And then if they have to then communicate it to someone else, the same thing happens again.
Yeah.
And you know, in the space of two communications, it's gone down to 1% of what the original thought in the head was from the, you know, the client or the first person.
And
that ability to listen and repeat back, you know, to check that there is a shared understanding. I find it hilarious when you do that and people's versions of what their understanding has been completely different from what was, you know, just immediately, you know, 20 seconds before, you know, explained.
Mm.
How do you deal with that as a construction professional?
Oh, another great question. I actually call what you've just described, I call that passive delegation. And I'll explain what I mean by that. And I can bring so many examples to this. When myself, business owner, goes on a construction site visit, for maybe I'm the client, maybe I'm the main contractor, doesn't matter. As I walk around that site, I have got better at this over the years, but I used to be terrible for it. I would use language like this. I'd see a pile of rubbish in the corner. I would walk past it. The next labourer I found, I would say something like, make sure that's tidy for next time I come back, and I'd walk off. The labourer is thinking, make sure what's tidy. When's next time he's coming back? What is he talking about? But the labourer doesn't feel empowered enough to challenge me or ask the question. So he just does what he thinks is best based on the information that he has, which is very little. So he might start looking for rubbish that's in another part of the site. He's got no idea when I'm coming back next, so doesn't know when to do it. So the guy's destined to fail before I've even left site. Now that's on me. I have to look at myself there and go, do you know what? I've fucked up there. I need to explain myself better. I need to be better at this. Now, a real good example of this came three days ago, working on a great grade two listed building just now. And in the entrance hallway, I'll try and explain this using words because I could do with pictures to explain it. But in the entrance hallway, there's some cladding that's got to go on. And that cladding consists of what we understand as the main contractor to be an MDF backboard and then some Scotia bead fitted to the backboard. So it forms like a picture frame in timber. Now, we understand that as clients. As main contractors, we get that. We have a drawing of it, but we talked through that drawing with the architect and with the conservation officer. We're all singing off the same hymn sheet. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had a carpenter come to look at this particular thing we wanted to be manufactured. And we gave him the drawing. Bear in mind, this drawing's not 3D, it's just in plan. So all you see are lines. We've communicated this drawing with this guy. The guy was Polish, not that that's relevant. The Polish guy came and he looked at it and he said, yep, I can do that. So my site manager said to the carpenter, could you knock me up a little sample panel before we let you loose on the whole property? And he said, yep, no problem at all. So the guy went away and he made what he believed to be the sample panel and brought it back to us. What he made was absolutely nowhere near what it was that we wanted. But what he made looked like the drawing. And that was a massive, massive learn for me. Still now, where I'm at now, the position I'm in now, and I'm still learning things like that. And this is just a communication piece. You know, he's not being explained this properly to him. And this wasn't because he was Polish. That's not even relevant. This was just because we've gave him a drawing and said, can you make us a sample panel of that? He now has to go away with that drawing and come up with his own perception of what's been presented to him in lines, you know, because it wasn't 3D. There was no section cut of it. It was just a plan drawing. So it looked like a sheet on top of a sheet, and not, you couldn't see the, it's hard to explain using words, but you get the gist.
And in terms of planning a refurb, like, do you want to just briefly describe like the key sort of steps within that process? And maybe just illustrate a little bit where communication is important at each one. So maybe give us the overview of the steps and then a quick example.
Yeah, of course. So when we set about a project, now I'm only talking to people now that was wrong. I'm talking to everybody, but those that are listening, this is only going to be relevant to you if you're looking to improve your profits that you receive from your refurbishment projects. If that's not for you, then this piece, what we're about to talk about, is probably not going to be relevant. You're not going to be interested, because what we teach here, what this whole thing is, the whole thing that we teach is to make more profit. Now, your homeowner might not be interested in that. People that are in property to have somewhere to park their money might not be interested in that. Hands-off investors might not be interested in that either. So this is not for you. This is for those that are delivering the jobs, delivering the project. And our site management model is broken down to three phases, the three P's we call it, the pre-production, the production, and the post-production. Production meaning the work, the process, the actual yakka. So we're talking pre-production, the pre-works, the stuff we need to do prior to that project starting. The production, which is the actual project, the work, the physical work. And then the post-production, what needs to be involved in that piece. So the pre-production work predominantly is the project design. That's going to be done by the project manager and delivered by the site manager. Now, the project manager is going to be getting hold of a client brief, getting hold of specifications, programs of works, expectations, budgets, payment terms, and all of that's all going to get drafted up into a project design brief, given to the site manager, so they can go and execute. Now, with that, he has to execute the plan. He has to manage compliance and manage the contracts. Then he's going to set up the site using, the communication piece on the pre-production. So the communication piece here is everything is in writing. Everything is in writing. If it wasn't written down, it was never said. That was a
moment
I used to say.
Yeah.
Say that to me all the time. It's not written down, Paul. It was never said. And he who has the best records always wins. That was another one of his. So when we look at this pre-production process, and I talk about being in writing, another mistake I see people make is they do it on WhatsApp or they do it by text message. That is horseshit. Get it on email or in a letter or in a report. Be professional, be purposeful, be persistent. Those things are so important when you're setting up a project, because all the work, all the yakka that you're putting at this end makes the actual delivery of the project so easy. People miss this. What they do is they start a project and then they plan it as they go. See that so many times. Comes to kitchen fit day. Where's the kitchen design? Oh, I ain't done it yet. And it's like, what? How have you not done it yet? That needs to be on site day one. All of this needs to be on site day one so I can effectively manage that project to deliver you more profit. Without that information, I cannot do that. So then we go into the production piece, which is establishing the site, the actual work, monitoring the job, doing the check-ins, doing the reports, weekly check-ins, inducting, gathering and capturing data, capturing variations, capturing extras, capturing progress, reporting, and payments. If there's interim payments to be made during the work, then that's critical to be managing here as well. And what's important on a communication piece there, on the production phase, is having systems, procedures, and processes in your business. Those things, all again written, are all going to drive your project's profits, having those in place. I'm making sure that they're communicated. I'm a lump of story into this now. I once had a plasterer working for me. He was new. It was the first project he'd worked for me on. In our business, our payment terms for contractors are they will be paid the following Friday following receipt of invoice. So if there is invoice comes in on the Thursday, it'll be paid the next day. If it comes in on the Friday night, they'll be paid the following Friday. That's how it works, because I only want one day that I'm apportioning to administration of making payments. That's how it works for sole traders, that is. So Plasterer came to work for us this one job, and that piece, that procedure should have been sent to him, and he should have agreed to it. Now, it was emailed to him, but the email didn't land. So he never received this. That triggered a change in our procedure, which that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what happened next. So he finished work on the Friday. Guy knows he gets paid on Fridays. That's all his understanding is. That's his perception of what the payment terms are. So he finishes this particular piece of work on the Friday night, graphs his bollocks off to get done on the Friday so he can get paid and get to the pub that night. 9 p.m. he finishes on the Friday, and he texts me. He actually texts my site manager first. I finish, mate. Can I get paid? My site manager lives really close to me, and he sent me a bit of a WhatsApp, laugh emojis, guy wants paying half nine at night. And I said, mate, he knows the score. He's had the payment terms. He gets paid next Friday. Now, he didn't get paid, but no one told him. No one communicated with him. What's now happening in this guy's head? He's working for a new main contractor. He's just done a load of work and sent his invoice over, and he's getting ignored. He can see we've read it, and he's getting ignored. What is going off in his head now? He's thinking, I'm getting knocked here. He tries again Saturday morning. I don't work weekends, neither does my site manager. Phones are off. He tries Sunday. Phones are off. He's now getting twitchy, and he's now getting a bit, what is going off here? I've just done all that work for you. I've grafted my balls off. I finished at 9 o'clock Friday night. Why are you not paying me? Why are you not picking up the phone? Why are you turning your phone off? He's now thinking the worst. For me, nothing's happening. Nothing's happening for me. I'm following my own process that I haven't communicated. So the Monday morning comes, and he's at the office door. All right. Hello, mate. How are you? Well, I'm not very good. Why aren't I being fucking paid? That is how he spoke to me. And I was like, mate, you get paid on Friday. Have you not had the procedure? What are you on about? And this is how the conversation went. What are you on about? I ain't had any procedure. Mate, just take five. Let's go have a sit down. So we came in. We had a chat. I said, look, mate, this is how our payment procedures work. You'll get paid on Friday. And this is why. And I ran through the process with him. And he was happy then. He was happy once I'd communicated with him properly. Had I not took the time to do that, took the time out of my Monday morning to do that, had he not been here, I probably actually wouldn't have even done that had he not been here. So that communication piece was, again, a massive learn. And when we get these learns have to be implemented back into your business, back into the process. You know, what do we do better? What can we do better next time? So what we can do better next time when we communicate new payment terms with new contractors is give them a call. Did you receive the terms okay? And are you okay with that? Yes, fine. If we've done that one little thing, that one follow-up phone call, none of that would have happened. Because he'd have known. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're trying to build a business or a property investment portfolio, your reputation with contractors is a really key thing.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And then the last piece in the process, the site delivery model, is post-production. So what do we do after the works are finished? So many people think, the works are finished. That's it. That's it. Let's sell it. That's it. Or let's get a tenant in, whatever that is, whatever your exit strategy is going to be. But we missed this piece. You missed this last piece, and you're asking for trouble. Making the final payment of all your subbies, all your contractors, getting together your health and safety requirements, pulling together all the warranties, pulling together all the guarantees for the products and services, all your certifications for the gas, the electrics, fence certificates, building control notices, all of them things. Pulling all that together, because I guarantee you when you don't do that in 4 months or 5 months time, somebody will want it. And if you haven't done it at this point, you're in trouble. You ain't going to find it. You ain't going to find it, and you ain't going to be able to get it. Defect reporting procedure. So project's finished. What do we do next? How are we going to communicate any defects with the main contractor? Are we going to give them 24 hours notice for anything urgent, 7 days for non-urgent, and 28 days for routine? What constitutes what routine is? What constitutes what's urgent? What constitutes non-urgent, and how we're going to communicate those things? Then we're going to have a project review meeting. That is critical, and nobody ever does it apart from me. When a project is finished, all the stakeholders, everybody that was involved, get them round a table, be it at Wetherspoons, be it at Costa, be it in an office, be it wherever, do it, do that work, be it a Zoom call, doesn't matter. Have that meeting. That meeting, so much stuff will come up in that meeting that you will not believe. Stuff will come out in that meeting you weren't aware of. Stuff will come out in that meeting.
And I think this is this is important both within the, I suppose, lifetime of the asset, after the builders have left site.
And that
can be something which can delay or reduce the value of a sale if you're looking to flip it or move it on. It can cause insurance issues down the track. It can cause a false sense of how much profitability, or you underestimate what level of maintenance is going to be required on an ongoing basis if you haven't done those bits at the back end.
Yeah, definitely.
What I'm really interested in, Paul, is in that last review meeting, because anyone who's looking to do something again, and you could be at the end of the project and promising yourself you're never going to do this ever again, but most people are wanting to scale their business, scale their portfolio. So if you've done a two up, two down property, it's rented out or you've sold it on, you're looking to do it again, you're looking to do another one, that project review, you've gone through, how do you actually run that with with not only in the context of that project, but building your business, building your system, building your template to do it again? What do you, how do you structure that meeting? So that, just say you're meeting with the various people involved in the Wetherspoons, project's done, and you're doing that review. What's in your mind, or is there an agenda? Like what's the?
So there are three key questions that the meeting is geared around. What I want to just pick on a little bit is a word you just used. You said the word scale. Now, this is something that I see a lot of property investors say, I want to scale. Now, you need two things to scale: processes and procedures and people. That's it. Now, without them things, you're not scaling, you're just doing it again. I hear people say, I'm going to scale my business and do another refurb this year. And they did one last year. That's not scaling, that's just repeating. Scaling is the ability to do multiple things at once. And that multiple things at once requires people and processes and procedures. So just to touch on that, what you just said, to answer your question about the project review meeting. So three key questions. Gear your meetings around these three questions. What went well? That's question number one. And we're going to really thrash this out, not just like paid lip service. Look into all elements of that build. What went well? Well, we finished early. We delivered it to 500 quid less than what we thought it was going to do. We got a discount on a kitchen. We got a new plaster in that was really good. Whatever those things are, really get into the nitty-gritty. Spend a good 30 minutes minimum on each of these questions. What went well? Question two always takes longer because it's easier to be critical. What did not work so well? So what didn't work so well on this project? Plaster let us down. Kitchen came damaged. Howdens wouldn't replace the oven. Whatever those things are, I'm just saying things off the top of my head now. Whatever those things are, and it's, your second question will always be laced longer. It will always be longer because it's easier to be critical than it is to be complimentary. I would try your hardest. Once you've done your not gone so well list, go back to your question one. So we'll go question one, what went well? Question two, what did not go so well? Go back to question one, what else went well? And then we're going to go to question three. What will we do next time, knowing what we know now? So that's where the game changes in question three. What will we do next time, knowing what we know now? And that might be, if you finished a project a week early in the what went well column, what would we do better next time, knowing what we know now? Might not be just about the negative. it could well be we will spend more time planning out our program because we got it wrong. We estimated it taking a week longer. Why did it not take a week longer? Did we overestimate the time it would take, or did we put extra resource on it? If we put extra resource on it, what can we do better next time with that extra resource? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not always the negative we're looking to change. Sometimes it's the positive.
And tell me, what's the most fun thing that you've found in running these construction projects?
The most fun thing I've found?
Yeah.
What about the process or like?
Yeah. What do you enjoy?
I love all of it. I love absolutely everything. Everything. There is nothing that I do. I learned this from Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary V, no doubt you've heard of him. I remember one of the very first podcasts I watched of his, and it was called "Stop Building and Doing Shit That You Hate." And I was like, wow, you know, you see so many people building businesses that they hate. I know a guy that runs a very successful estate agency, and he hates it. And I say, what are you building it for? Sell it and do something that you love. You're only here once. Do something that you love. Now, ironically, us sitting on this podcast, I started a podcast about a year ago, and I absolutely hated it. I hated it. I hated the process. I hated people letting me down. I hated announcing that I'd got a big baller guest on, and then they didn't turn up. I hated pushing it, the marketing, the questions that came as a result of it. The editing, I hated the whole thing. It was like, so the team were like, why are you doing it? I said, well, you know, it's part of the process. You have to do it. It's marketing, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, but I hate it. I can't stand it. Well, let's do something else. What do you love doing? Well, I love doing my Facebook Lives in the morning. Let's do more of that. So let's do more of the stuff you love and less of the stuff you hate.
Well, that's great advice. And I feel privileged that you've come on the podcast.
Hey, being a guest, I'm okay with. I ain't got to do anything apart from chat shit, and I love doing that.
Yeah. Very good. So Paul Tinker, your construction training business, what's the website address, please?
Yeah, so the web address where you can get in contact is www.constructiontrainingacademy.com. That's www.constructiontrainingacademy.com.
Well, once again, Paul Tinker, you've been a great guest, and I hope to get you back on again soon. I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property World. Paul, thanks again.
Thank you, mate.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.